Welcome to the first episode of DevOps Dimension, and I thought, what better way to kick off the first episode with Dev and Ops? an internal story we just launched recently at aka.ms/ourdevopsjourney about how Microsoft does DevOps. So I have two special guests from Microsoft that are in the DevOps world here. Engineering world. So, but could you tell us a little bit about yourselves and what you do?
Yeah, sure. My name is Greg Lubert. I'm a senior software engineer. I work in Visual Studio Cloud Services, and I work with Shankar here. Work on the MSDN subscription space. So, service with millions of users, very high volume, fairly critical. And we've been sort of going through this transition and learning about DevOps as we go and getting better at it. And it's been quite a learning experience, I think, for both of us.
Awesome.
Yeah, I'm Shankar, and I'm a service engineer. I work with Greg, and I've been in this team for almost 3 years now. And I'm also from MSDN Subscriptions. So I'm a service engineer. I worked pre-DevOps and now in DevOps model.
Okay.
So you guys would have a lot of stories to tell us.
That's what we're hoping to hear about.
Good.
Yeah. one of the big things I'd love to just kind of talk through here is how things change, right? When in your worlds before you were on a DevOps kind of oriented team to now, and kind of how those different roles and things changed. What's a major area that you would say is kind of different now?
I mean, definitely, I guess the first thing that comes to mind is sort of service design, because that was a big change for us in that, it felt very much before DevOps, like service design was kind of something that just happened. And then we would just kind of throw it over the wall at the service engineers, like, here you go, like, enjoy, have fun. That's something that we've changed a lot. And that's one of the things where I sort of saw the quickest and sort of earliest benefits from it, right? It was kind of like an easy win. We started on this latest project of ours. I think almost the first thing I did was went over and talked to Shankar. And it was just like, hey, okay, so tell me, I've got this idea. Is this actually going to work in practice? Like, have you used these sorts of things in the past? How reliable do you consider this or that technology? And like sort of getting Shankar in at the beginning as we started to think about it was just hugely valuable, because there were some areas where we just kind of cut it off right away. Like, oh no, yeah, we've done that before. Yeah. It was not a good idea. You sort of get the advantage of a whole nother perspective and a whole nother set of knowledge, right?
So in the past, you there were times that where you would get close to production, then you'd realize it wasn't.
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, oh, okay. Yeah. And, on a previous project, I think I remember we ended up spending like weeks, doing all kinds of crazy shenanigans trying to deal with the fact that this TFS deployment, at scale, really didn't handle the number of identities we wanted to put right into it very well. Cool. Trying to join it with Microsoft AD, and it wasn't pretty. And it was the kind of thing where if we just had a conversation or two with the service engineers ahead of time, like, they knew this stuff. They knew that we were about to walk into trouble.
Right.
But nobody bothered to ask them, right? It was like, oh yeah, I'm pretty sure this will work.
So how did that feel from your, service engineer near offside of the house?
Yeah, actually, I think pre-DevOps, we always used to be, in our own world and just dealing with customer issues. And so any new service or feature that feature team is working on, we just wait until the last minute, we were told. So before it needs to be pushed out into production, it comes to us with the very, as I said, the last minute and without any, I'm sorry, I'm losing.
That's okay. So you wouldn't have any idea really of like what's coming your way, and then maybe like they try and deploy this stuff on a mismatch of the infrastructure, right?
Exactly.
And things are just kind of like.
It used to be something like, Dev always focuses on, writing their application mainly for their dev environment, and they want to see it working in their dev environment. They don't, think from the production perspective, how this is going to be, once it is pushed out into production, how it is going to work in production for the customers. Mm. So when it is time to, take it to production, that is when, a lot of last minute surprises come up, you know.
So
the capacity issues and the server infrastructure is not available. I mean, like, in dev environment, like, they always write the application, they run everything on just one single box, as opposed to, you know, like production, where you have you know, a cluster of servers and multiple data centers and load balancing and things like that.
So did working with them help you see that you had major differences between the environments as well, and try to make them more similar, or?
I mean, in the past, you know, like without cloud-based technologies that we have today, everything used to be on-premise, and because of the, you know, cost factor, dev environments used to be just, you know, as small as you can think of, just one, you know, server where they run everything on out of it. But, you know, yeah, as you said, like, I mean, the dev environments never used to actually mimic the production, the real production environment. So in terms of scale or, you know, in terms of performance or anything.
Well, and I can say as a dev that that's actually been huge. Like, and you sort of alluded to the fact that, like, the technology is it's getting easier and easier to do this well now because of the advancements of technology and cloud and that sort of thing. But it's actually really valuable being able to have an environment that is a lot like production. You know, it helps me figure out earlier what things are and aren't going to work. And that's something where, you know, recently what we've been doing is using the Visual Studio Services framework, which is, you know, basically the underlying infrastructure for Visual Studio Online. Part of it is, it's very cool because it's kind of free money in a lot of ways. It gives us a lot of capabilities that we wouldn't have had the chance to invest in otherwise. But it's things like this as well, that it's relatively straightforward. Like, there's not that many differences at all between you know, our dev environments and our sort of test environments as we go and up production. Towards production. It's like it's a smooth path, a smooth rollout of the functionality as we go.
So it's almost like that VSSF is providing you that something like infrastructure as code, which has that consistency on that.
Yeah.
The same thing in dev as in test as in production that you can kind of run against. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, in some ways, it's like when we finally roll to production, the difference is almost imperceptible because you're just, you know, it's like a few changes to settings, and otherwise it's the same stuff. You know.
Do you still see though that value though, even though you have that consistent framework of the insights that the kind of service engineering has? Still, even though you have a consistent framework, is there still, like, what does that dialogue look like these days in that space? Yeah.
There's like less of a hard line,
you
know, like, in fact, like, just as like there used to be a really hard line, here's your dev environment. It's like one box. It's kind of crummy and small, and there's not much going on there. Right. Mm-hmm. And then here's production in all its glory and bad things happen in the transition between this tiny little environment and this really big, complicated one. Now, you know, by the same token now, like, you know, our sort of progression towards, you know, something being in production is much smoother and more, you know, less discontinuous. It's kind of the same way, like our relationship in terms of how we work together and what we work on is much smoother and less discontinuous, you know.
Actually, now, you know, because of the cloud technologies, we are able to focus, actually pay more attention to the service design or the actual application design, as opposed to, you know, worrying about your server infrastructure
or
setting up all the other, you know, pieces to stitch together. So we can actually focus more on the service design right from the day one the you know, dev starts to code. So that's another big advantage.
I guess like probably the part of it that I find most like coolest, like it feels the best about DevOps, is the fact that it also feels like there's much less of a barrier between us and our customers, right? Especially as like a dev, where in the olden days it was kind of like, you know, you'd hear tales come from the service engineers. They go, people are having problems. You're like, prove it to me, right? Like, you know, it was not that smooth.
It worked on my dev box.
Yeah, exactly. It worked on my box. This tiny little thing. Everything was great. You know, one user, we're golden, right? Get out of, you know, be gone with you and your bug reports. You know, part of it is now that we work together more closely. You know, we have more similar technologies that we're working with, all these sorts of things. I feel like customers are really much more front and center for both of us. Like, we actually spend kind of a surprising amount of time now. Like, okay, so, you know, we saw this thing, and we saw this alert. What's the potential customer impact? Like, how would we know if customers were affected? Like, in what way would they be? It's like, I don't remember having that many conversations. Like, it wouldn't have even really occurred to us to have those sort of conversations before. It's like, you know, it was very mechanistic. Like, okay, follow bug, we'll get to it, you know? Like, you know, in this DevOps environment, it feels much smoother and more natural to have those sorts of conversations and to be sort of preoccupied with those things. You know, it's like when we both wake up at 2 a.m, we both kind of, you know, some alert went off. You know, we both kind of know more about what the stakes are and what our customers want from us and how to give it to them than we would have had we been off in our own silos. And, you know, it's just not really any kind of barrier between us in terms of working on it.
So you hit on a bunch of different stuff there.
Yeah, sorry.
So let's, like, unpack a lot of that.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, one of the things you kept mentioning is monitoring, alerting. Mm-hmm. How is that different in a pre-DevOps world and a now DevOps world?
What? I mean,
I think pre-DevOps world, monitoring or even the telemetry never used to be part of, I mean, it used to be just the responsibility of the operations team, not, you know, dev team's responsibility. So the monitoring, once the operations team decides, okay, what are the different application components that needs to be monitored 24/7, they used to configure the monitoring, and, you know, all the threshold values and everything used to be just their own decision. Now I think in DevOps model, every you know, life side monitoring that we think of, actually everything related to, you know, the monitoring, the configuration, the threshold values, everything is checked into the source. So dev is aware, like, when the values are tweaked and what is actually being modified. And so I don't know how to put it, but it's much more collaborative now.
And so it also sounded like when there was something that needed to be looked into, either if it was an issue or, you know, just some areas that you wanted to focus on, now there's a responsibility from both sides.
Is another support model. We call it DRI, and some other groups, they call it on call. Mm-hmm. So now, I mean, in DRI model, dev is also expected to take responsibility of, you know, attending to customer escalations and fixing customer problems 24/7. So now the incident management is so matured that when there is an alert in the middle of the night, you can actually predefine the routing rules in your monitoring and incident management. So depending on the type of alert, whether it's infrastructure related or application related, they can get, they can be routed appropriately to the, you know, whether it's an operations personnel or a developer, 24/7. Every week they work on a schedule, 24/7 schedule. So the alerts can directly go to the developer today, as opposed to in the past, always they used to go to tier one support and then tier
move up
two.
The chain,
There used to be different levels of support in the past, like tier one, tier two, tier three, then the operations team. Then the operations team, once they realize that, oh, this is not infrastructure related, this is code related, it needs to go to our developer, or we need to engage a developer. By then, you know, you would have lost a significant amount of time having the customer, the other side of it, you know, waiting for a response.
And from the dev team's perspective, how did that change?
Well, I think one really cool thing about it is that we, like, I actually get feedback now, right? Like, in the past, like, I remember, you know, just a few years ago, I was working on a project, and I happened to mention one of the service engineers, yeah, this feature has just been performing great. And he's like, what? No. Like, it's terrible. What are you talking about? Yeah. I was like, I just assumed, like, it were, you know, it was good on my box, right? Like, it's like, it never even got back to me. Like, right. No, customers have been complaining. This search feature is really slow. Nobody knows why. It was like, I didn't even hear about it. You know, it's like, and until I just happened to mention it. And now it's like I feel like much more of a stakeholder in this stuff, right? And it actually kind of changes your attitude while you're writing the code, because you start thinking like, what's gonna it's not just like, oh, I guess I better throw an exception here. It's like, what exactly do I want to see when I'm on DRI duty at 2 a.m? Yeah. I just got woken up. How do what's the thing that's going to tell me quickly if I can go back to bed or stay up, right? It's like, and that's on me as, you know, as I'm writing the thing, I'm thinking, you know, it's like, how am I actually going to be able to figure out what's happening with this and take care of it? I really don't, you know, I can't honestly say that I had that sort of focus when, it was just going to be Shankar.
Yeah, it's basically the involvement, right?
Yeah.
So it's the involvement now. I mean, dev is equally involved when it comes to, you know, customer, fixing the customer problems. Now dev is equally involved as support on operations.
Yeah, and it sounds like you've gotten a lot richer data behind the monitoring as well. It's not like a, hey, HTTP 200, we're good.
Yeah.
Exactly. Maybe that improved application telemetry. Performance monitoring. Yeah. You've got stack traces and rich data right there immediately behind backing the alert. And whatever's going on.
And it's very configurable, which is really nice. It makes it a lot easier for us to sort of target things that we're concerned about and figure stuff out. One thing I'm particularly proud of with this MSDN admin thing that we put out, and that Shankar has just been excellent to work with on, is I feel like we've caught a lot of issues before any customers really figured it out, right?
Yeah, I mean, application telemetry is a lot better now, if you talk about 5 years before. It's a lot improved now.
And also making sense of that data, because you mentioned there's ways that it will even figure out where the area or which team should look at an issue. And because there's a lot more data being collected, you must have a way of letting the system realize where the issue has been raised as well.
And I mean, there's a couple of facets to it. Like, one of them is that now that devs are more interested in this, paying more attention, it's not so much a black box as it used to be, where it's like, the only way I know if it's working or not is I got a 200, right? It's there's much more ability for us to sort of think ahead of time about what sorts of things we actually care about in the service. So we can be much more specific about, the sort of customer behaviors and actions and, potential problems that we're looking for. I guess the other thing is, working more closely, sort of being more empowered this way, Shankar may not know, this line of code, occasionally we've seen an intermittent bug in it where something bad will happen if we try to create an account or whatever, right?
Yeah.
And I may not know that one of our ATs is flaky in some way, right? Application tier. Yeah, one of our roles, basically, on Azure. Yeah. Because we're sort of both working together, we can both sort of see and work on the same data. We can kind of bring our different conclusions to it as well. Hey, look at this query. Does that look right to you? No, as a matter of fact, I think I've seen that bug, right?
Right.
Those were things that never happened in the past for me. I never really had this sort of joy of discovering things with service engineers. It was much more of a, transactional sort of operation between us, why didn't you document your stuff better?
Pointing fingers.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah, whose fault is it? Let's go get that guy, right?
You always tried to avoid that even back then.
But, yeah.
It's definitely almost implicitly adversarial if you both have your own areas of responsibility, but you can both do things to make it harder on the other person.
Yeah.
It's hard not to get trapped that way.
Yeah.
Right? I feel much more like we're incentivized to cooperate with each other, and that Shankar's success is my success and my success is Shankar's. And that wasn't necessarily the case before, it wasn't built into it the way it is now. Mm-hmm.
So I'd like to shift, because I know that devs getting a page in the middle of the night is a bit of a shock factor for dev guys. Mm-hmm. So I'd like to flip that around and think, what are some of the big shock factors that maybe a service engineer or involved kind of ops person has had to deal with, maybe with code or other things like that, right? Yeah.
It's okay. Pretend I'm not here.
Yeah.
You can say it's
okay.
Me.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, as I mentioned, the last minute surprises, especially when you're launching a new service, a new feature for the customers. For example, MSDN admin was a service, a new service that we launched on July 1st for the customers. And just 6 hours before going live, we realized that there is one URL redirection that needs to be set up, and the clock was ticking, and we had to work under pressure because there was a last minute thing that we discovered, and it was a surprise. And so those are the some of the examples that can be avoided, like on a daily basis, if both dev and operations team, you know, coordinate and collaborate. And also from the dev team, you know, if everything that they do in their development environment, if they think, okay, how am I going to do this in production tomorrow? So that actually, you know, makes things easier for everybody, for both the teams, and eventually, you know, it becomes you know, smoother for,
So what are maybe some of the skills, like if you think about yourself when you started in non-DevOps teams, that, and you look now to the types of things you're doing, like, wow, that's really different in the skill set wise, you know? Like, I know just given a, trying to get interject a personal example, like, I know I myself, you know, 6 years ago, I was not checking in stuff into source code. I was not writing, like, infrastructure as code scripts, right? Like, these kinds of things are very different, you know. So is there anything like that that is new for you, kind of?
Yeah, definitely the tools are improvised, and even the cloud-based technologies are actually making this a possibility. So earlier we used to spend a lot of time in just maintaining the server infrastructure and things like that, as opposed to just focusing on, you know, the service design and understanding more about the application and its features. We never used to actually think about even spending time in understanding the product or the service that we are offering to the customers, but most of our time we used to spend it on maintaining the server infrastructure. Now with the cloud-based technologies, we are, like, I mean, 100% able to dedicate our time towards, you know, our feature team and spend, coordinate more with the feature team. And
so you've had to learn a lot more about the app architecture
architecture,
actual coding of how the service works, and get deeper understanding of the apps and services that are going on. You're starting to get a little more into the dev world with how things work, right?
Before this, I would have never expected, you know, to be checking in, like, sort of like the template files that you put together for us, right? Like, you know, he goes and works this stuff out, and you know, we're checking in service engineer code, and, you know, the first couple of times it happened, it was like, you know, simultaneous sort of party, and this feels strange, right? Like, and I mean, it's kind of cool to sort of see service engineers in our world a little bit more too. You know, it makes makes it easier to sort of communicate on things, and you know, I think likewise, it sort of inspires me to try to understand their side of it a little bit more. You know, it's like now that we sort of have shared responsibilities, like, you know, I'm much more interested in how this stuff actually works, like how the infrastructure goes together, what they have to do to keep things running. You know, that was maybe not so much the case before. They're sort of mysterious bunch.
And what about on the proactive side, where you're trying to identify a new area where you should focus on in the future, or if you want to test things out in production? How has that changed between what you used to do before and now?
Yeah, this is actually an area where I feel like we're just starting to sort of find out, like, work out what's possible. Like, the framework gives us a lot of cool options, and we're just starting to try stuff out. Like, we're going to do sort of the graduated rollout of this new subscriptions infrastructure, right? Like, some, you know, smaller audience than a larger one. And, you know, I know that we have some, you know, that we have some ideas about being able to do A/B testing and those sorts of things in the future. You know, there's definitely a huge advantage in the fact that we get much more feedback from our monitoring and telemetry than we ever really did before. And that feedback is sort of tighter and more relevant, you know, and that's certainly part of it. You know, we understand our customers better now in this model, I feel like. But yeah, it's also that we sort of have the ability, you know, it's not like I have to like file a piece of paperwork and wait 7 days before we can flip a feature flag right. and get something delivered to customers. Like, you know, Shankar and I have a conversation, we work out what needs to happen, what we have to think about, and then, you know, it's when the time comes, we flip the switch and see what happens, right? You know, it also, in some ways, it feels sort of looser and less constrained than in the old model, and that can be a little scary. I guess what I like about it, though, is that there's also this sort of counterbalancing effect of, I also know that we can be much more responsive if something bad happens, right? You know, and like we were talking about being proactive, like it's much easier to be proactive about something when you're not like living in dread of making changes, right? Like, oh, I got to convince the service engineers to do this in the first place, and I got to wait for it to happen. You know, it's like we can kind of work on it sort of in real time, figure out what needs to happen. And, you know, part of that's technology, and sort of as we sort of mature in our processes, it becomes more possible to try to address problems before they occur and not have to be so paranoid about change. But, you know, part of it also is just this model makes it so that there's many fewer barriers. There's a lot less friction when it comes to figuring out that something's going wrong, you know, figuring out what the next feature needs to be to satisfy our customers, that sort of thing.
There's one kind of big area, you mentioned a key word that I'm picking up there a couple times that we haven't talked about yet, really is change management. So how do I get changes in production? You're just like, oh yeah, I just flip on a bit and it goes. And it's like, there's a lot going on there.
Well, I realize that.
Yeah.
A lot of it's automated now.
Right.
You know?
So let's talk a little more about that. Mm. Like, how is deploying code, right, different now versus before, right?
Yeah.
How is things under the hood that are there, right? Continuous deployment, release management, these types of things. Mm-hmm. How is that different? Yeah.
It's certainly easier now. It's certainly a lot more straightforward. There's a lot more automation and tooling available to us. And actually, in some ways, we're sort of counterpoised between the two because we have an old on-premise site that doesn't have the benefits of most of this automation and technology. Mm-hmm. And then we have this sort of site that we're gradually draining people to, that we're building up, that's up in the cloud, that does have the advantage. So we kind of, there's kind of a stark understanding of like the difference in change management, the difference in effort that it requires to roll things out to these. I mean, you know, last time we did an MSDN admin deployment, it was like, type a couple lines and, you know, run RM, watch it go. And then when we're going to deploy our old on-premise site, is like this intricate choreography of dropping scripts to share folders and, you know, like moving things out into various on-premise.
I think automation is the key.
Yeah, it's been a big part of it, right?
Yeah.
And does that make, I guess, it makes it easier for you to make the change without worrying, and you accepting the change as well at the same time?
Yeah, that's release management.
Yeah.
That's Visual Studio Release Manager.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And now actually dev can initiate the deployment as opposed to, you know, operations team.
Yeah.
So, I mean, as an operations team, as an operations engineer, I used to hate to be a bottleneck. Like if dev has like, you know, daily build or at least a weekly build, it used to be a big challenge for us to take it to production every time, to you know, not to kind of cause any service downtime or make any human errors. Now with the automated tools, it's a lot smoother than ever before, and so we are even comfortable doing daily deployments to production.
Yeah.
With the automated tools.
Which I never thought I'd see today, honestly.
Yeah.
It still kind of blows my mind a little bit. Right?
So I hear like it's nice to not have to go through long docs and like, you know, push scripts and things over.
Yeah.
Not, of course, nobody wants to make an error in a deployment, right? That's the Net Capital story where they lost their business because one server and one step was wrong.
Yeah.
But what would you say now is kind of the service engineer role in the deployment? Do you,
Yeah, actually, I mean, there is no role for the service engineer when it comes to deployments today.
Okay.
I think they can actually, we can actually focus more on the health of the service before and after the deployment. Mm-hmm. So earlier, like, I mean, in the past, we used to spend most of our time in deploying itself, the code to production, and not spend much time after the deployment to kind of check the service health and find any new bugs because of the change. But now you have an opportunity to spend actually more time because you're not spending a lot of time doing the actual deployment.
So there's times, I'm guessing, where now that you're having a more deeper focus on the app and the service, you have a deeper knowledge of that, you're able to perhaps find issues that are there in production that may have not gotten caught by alert, or other things that you can help that go back into the design of the service or other things.
It was like a month or two ago, we were doing a pretty tricky data migration kind of thing. And it made it all the way to production and didn't work. And Shankar like was watching, and he pretty much immediately was like, "Oh nope, something went wrong. I'm getting an error. Roll this back, right?"
Yeah.
And you know, the things we were able to figure out, we were able to see that no customers were affected. Like we were able to have it sort of in isolation for that check, so that we didn't have that problem. We were able to roll it back without any downtime. You know, it's like basically we made a mistake and we didn't have to pay for it because we sort of well prepared. And you know, because Shankar wasn't spending all his time like scratching his head at 100, you know, bullet point lists of things that he had to do, he was able to be instead watching and keeping an eye on the customer and seeing what was about to happen. And so, you know, that in the old world, I'm fairly certain that would have been a bit of a disaster, and it would have taken us some time to fix, especially because data was being pushed around, right, which is always a pain. You know, in this brave new world of DevOps, you know, it ended up just kind of being a sort of awkward 20 minutes or so, and then, you know, back to the drawing board, figure out what went wrong, and we actually had a lot of telemetry, so it was, we actually had a pretty good idea of what went wrong. It was like, oh yeah, you know, it's one of those forehead slapping kind of moments. But yeah, I mean, I feel like in the old world, we wouldn't have really had the second chance to get that right, or the opportunity to discover it. Like, you know, it was kind of a victory on a lot of levels, I guess, even as we kind of messed up in that case.
So on the problem management side, do you notice, like, is there the ability to just determine trends and things over time? Like, you know, do you have more time to kind of look, you know, from backwards at things that are happening and discover? It may not be that case of, hey, I saw it just roll out, but we notice this issue kind of keeps happening every so often, and you figure that out. Have you had instances like that?
Yeah, actually, I mean, in traditional, you know, pre-DevOps model, a lot of customer issues, I mean, the operations team always had a kind of mindset where, you know, most of the issues, they just fix them, like, kind of putting a band-aid around it, and unless it's a very repetitive issue, they don't actually engage the dev team. But now with the kind of visibility or involvement the dev team also has, both into the monitoring system and incident management, there's no way, like, I mean, the operations team can just hide any issues and not, you know, provide that as a feedback instead to the dev team. So we do now actually watch the trends and patterns and see if there is a code fix that's needed, like kind of a permanent fix, as opposed to just putting a band-aid around it and just call it resolved.
Sounds like you have a specific example if you want to share with us what that one was.
I was grateful that you figured out that we needed larger roles before we started running out of working set on them. You know, he was just keeping an eye on the reporting, and he was like, it looks like we're actually using quite a bit more RAM than you guys thought we were going to be at this point. Perhaps we should just bump these up, right? And you know, that could have actually developed into a pretty nasty problem, but you know, he was just keeping an eye on it, like, hey, you know, let me check these things, see if anything interesting happens. I think there was another time you helped us find a memory leak, right? Where we had no intimation that there might be any kind of memory leak in the system. There's no reason for it to happen. It was still a little puzzling, but you know, we because we were sort of keeping an eye on these things, you know, it was one of those like, oh, that's odd, why is that happening? And they go talk and like, no, that really shouldn't, it happen in that situation. So yeah, I mean, those sorts of things are really valuable. You know, it's like every time we find one of those and fix them ahead of time, I just feel like 3 days of my life coming back that I didn't have to scramble trying to put together some last second like patch fix. Like, oh my gosh, the server's going down. How do we fix it? It's much more like routine, straightforward sort of thing. Like, okay, I guess we have to do this. You know. That's hugely nice, you know, just getting that sort of wasted effort back is really, really great.
So I guess that would leave you more time to work on features.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, then, and think about customers and find out what they want, you know. Yeah.
Cool.
All those things.
Yeah, I was, I'm like, you know, having dev and ops, it's like, okay, wow, devs get to do more of what they like, write new stuff, and ops still gets to do fun stuff too, right?
But in some ways, like, it feels like ops's role is sort of expanded. I don't know if it feels like that to you, but it's like there's you get to, not only get to do more of the things that are interesting and cool in your world, but I see you doing more than you were sort of empowered to do in the past, you know?
Yeah, actually, I mean, I like to be more involved in, you know, service design than just sitting and fixing the, customer issues.
Just patching it after the
Just patch, deploying the code to the production and call it a day. I like to actually sit with the dev and see every feature that they work on from, you know, like from an operations guy perspective, like how differently it could be done. And share my ideas and work hand in hand with the dev team as opposed to just come and sit and fix a couple of issues and deploy it.
And off we go. and he's got, because he's sort of looking at this data all the time and keeping an eye on the site, he's got a really good feel for what's going on with customers and what's going on with the site. And, you know, it's like my example from before of like, wait, that feature didn't work? I didn't even realize, you know? It's like, instead it's like, oh no, but you realize like, you know, the majority of the time people do this, right? Or they go through the system like this. It's like those sorts of insights. Are really, really valuable. It can help you understand what the priority of things is and, you know, what you should be focusing on and sort of what the important parts are. It really shapes the whole process, you know?
Yeah, and then seeing how the service behaves in production, the types of alerts and thresholds for the infrastructure. So when it comes down to the service design, it's like, well, you've got all of that focus and expertise that you're providing back to you guys on getting the next feature, the next service tuned more efficiently to be realistic and performant and make customers happy.
Yeah, I mean, like the feedback from the admin site has been super valuable in this next thing that we're building because, like, we had a lot of lessons learned, right? Like, there were lots of things, you know, there were things that we started on sooner, like the URL redirect because we knew about it, you know? I feel like a lot of that sort of feedback and that sort of knowledge would have been lost in the old world because, you know, it's like Shankar was saying, you just fix it and, you know, and don't bother the devs with it, we'll just fix it, right? And then it just happens forever and, you know, nobody really acknowledges the sort of human capital that's being wasted just sort of patching over each other's mistakes, you know? I feel like, you know, because we get the sort of feedback loop going between his world and ours, and you know, there's just a lot of efficiencies that fall out of it, a lot of things that are better for everyone.
Cool. So there's one overarching thing that I know is really important in the DevOps world. And you hinted on a little bit earlier when you said, hey, we're both, you know, his win is my win and all that kind of thing. Well, that rolls up to metrics, right? Yeah, what are you both gold on? And so how is that different then versus now?
Yeah, I mean, so one thing that I really like is that in a lot of ways our metrics are somewhat unified, right? You know, it's like it used to be, you know, if it took Shankar like 36 hours to rotate all the certificates, that was kind of his problem, I guess. Or, you know, that's what it seemed like in the old world, right? Yeah. Now it's kind of like, I sort of feel a little bit of pride if we can reduce the amount of time it takes to rotate all this stuff and to sort of do the routine maintenance, because it benefits me as well now, right? You know, so in a lot of ways, like, you know, we sort of have a shared goal now, whereas before we had kind of our separate little domains of things that we cared about, you know. And I think even then there was more overlap than people were sort of admitting. You know, it's like, you know, what's your availability, you know, what's your uptime? It's like, well, you know, back in the day, it's like his uptime is not going to look that great if my code is garbage, right? But now it's much more like we are together trying to figure out how to make sure that we have the most availability that we can. You know, the best performance. And
have any business metrics come down to you guys as well as part of this, or?
Yeah, I mean, in some ways, I think
the KPIs.
There are definitely metrics that come to us from on high as well, and there's sort of standards and bars that we're expected to meet as well. And I don't think we've had too much trouble meeting them.
Actually, we have DevOps reports now, so In the past, it used to be just the operations team getting those reports. Now, Dev also gets them on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. That actually indicates the service health.
Yeah.
Also, we measure, I think, the slow commands and failed commands.
Yeah.
So Dev gets actually idea about like how their service is doing in production on a daily basis.
Yeah,
as opposed to in the past knowing only when there was a problem or an outage.
Mm.
Then kind of gathering the metrics and seeing what is going on, you know, like behind the scenes, whether it's a memory leak or, you know, capacitive related problems. But today you have like on a daily basis, you can monitor the health of your service, and mm-hmm. if there are any slow commands, you can just catch them right away and then proactively go on, you know, gather more related telemetry and try to fix the problem before customer escalates.
Does that ever tie back into dev work? Like maybe, for instance, if a particular feature team is, we're seeing the availability is just dropping really low for availability team, is the next sprint, do they have to do anything different to work on that? Or
yeah, I mean, so specific example here, was it a few months ago, I remember the issue with a job that just wasn't getting registered, right?
Yeah.
And I mean, there were a few things that were sort of wins there. Like, first of all, we kind of noticed it, and we're like, you know, we were digging through telemetry, it wasn't in, we didn't see it in the availability reports yet. We noticed it, we're like, oh, this looks like a fairly minor bug, I don't think anybody will be affected. We got the DevOps report, and it was like, oh no, that's hurting our availability. This is a much bigger deal than we thought it was, right? You know, it was an asynchronous job, so we figured it wouldn't even be a problem that we could wait. It was like, no, this is urgent. So, you know, one part of it was that we figured out that something was more important to our customers than we thought it was because we had these sort of metrics that we were paying attention to. And then another part of it is that helped us understand what we should be prioritizing better, right? You know, it's like, yeah, definitely in the old world, it's just like everything got shoveled onto the next sprint because who knows, right? You know, in this, it's like we knew that that this one was going to be important and customer impacting, so we focused on it right away. I think, you know, we had a mitigation in place within a day or so. Shankar helped with that. It wasn't very fun mitigation. It was kind of a manual one, and then we came out with the code fix later. But, you know, I think like the fact that we were able to work together and come with a mitigation wouldn't have been very likely in the past. It kind of required both of us to sort of bring our own expertise to it and like, oh yeah, you know, you can actually you can actually define those through this command, right? You know, Shankar pointed that out to me. It's like, oh, okay, well, I know what they're supposed to be set to. You know, and then also, yeah, just the fact that we had sufficient information to be able to tell that it was worth prioritizing, because at first glance, it didn't look like a serious issue, you know?
So I would love to know, I mean, kind of some practical tips. So if you're talking to folks out there who are listening that maybe are not started on a DevOps team or would love to get things going towards a DevOps team, what are some tips that you might give? It could be anything on just kind of helping make that transition or adjusting yourself to this shift.
Yeah. I mean, there's a couple of observations I'd make. One of them is if you've begun the transition to Agile, DevOps kind of smoothly flows out of it, right? Like, you know, it's sort of the, you know, enterprise application of Agile principles. So in some ways, maybe the best place to start is understand Agile and work on becoming Agile, because the same sort of principles drive this as well, right? I guess another thing is that I would sort of caution folks is it's tempting to set the goals first and then figure out how to get to them. So you say, we're just going to deploy every day, right? But if you just say, I'm going to deploy every day without figuring out the various things that have to happen, right? There has to be monitoring, has to be automatable. You have to be able to roll back, for heaven's sake. If you're going to deploy every day, you have a bad day. Yeah. you have to be able to roll that back, right? Yeah. So, you know, I guess another thing is like, you know, don't necessarily focus on the end goal or try to jump, you know, leapfrog ahead 10 steps and get to this great state of maturity, but like little steps. And I mean, in keeping with that philosophy of Agile, like feedback loops, right? Like I think the sort of recurring theme of the sort of collaboration that Shankar and I have been having is that we give each other a lot of feedback. We get a lot of feedback. We're constantly improving because we're always trying to figure out what's wrong and make it better. And I think as long as that's your sort of attitude going into DevOps, it's really not that jarring or terrible or painful or, you know, paradigm breaking or anything. You know, the things kind of, one thing sort of smoothly flows into the next thing because you're always sort of taking stock of where you're at. I think, you know, the danger is trying to be over ambitious or not paying attention to the process as you're going through it. Those are the sort of things I would watch out for. What do you think?
Yeah, I think you covered.
Oh, all right. Thanks, buddy.
So, yeah, I think automation is the key for me. So rather than just spending a lot of time in doing repetitive tasks, if deployments, for example, are automated, then we get more time to actually spend with the our counterparts and the feature team and do more productive work than spending more time on the repetitive
tasks. And you get more confident as well.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Because you've automated, it's repetitive.
Yeah. Yes.
You can just be confident that it's going to deploy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So maybe for an ops person, mm-hmm. where there's a lot of manual stuff, or really any manual stuff in that process, that ops person taking some of the first steps, maybe even to say, hey, I'd love to automate this, and work with the dev and say, you know, hey, can we work together, get this thing audited, or I knock it out,
yes.
and this is you validate if it looks okay, or whatever, right? Those kinds of things.
That's
where the feedback is very valuable, right? So the more feedback we provide to our, you know, feature team, the better it is for both teams.
Mm-hmm.
So
when being open to receiving feedback too,
yes.
you know, I think in the old world it was kind of easy to ignore each other mm-hmm. or to mm-hmm. be like, oh, you know, ops is complaining about the documentation again, or you know, they're complaining about the way we drop these things. You know, maybe we'll put a story on there. We'll see if we get to it. You know, and I think like the sort of attitude change of like being open to trying this stuff out and to hearing what we're saying. You know, to some extent, DevOps begins with N, and then you sort of extend that out into your sort of practices and processes. I think like a good first step is like, you know, like you said, and like he was saying, you know, automation's a kind of slam dunk kind of place to begin when you're going down the path. And you know, each thing that you do makes the next thing easier to do. As long as you're not skipping ahead, you know, it's like once you've automated all this stuff, it becomes a lot easier to think about how you're going to also run automated tests to go with the automated deployment, and then how you're going to automatically roll back if the tests don't pass. You know, it's like each part of it kind of builds on the next. So, you know, if you just kind of keep your eye on the ball, I don't think it's actually that terrible a transition, and it pays off throughout. So it's not like you have to labor away in obscurity for 2 years just to see a benefit. You do something small now, and you'll get some benefit for it, and that'll give you the energy to go do something else that's a little better. You know.
Also, the daily stand-up is another thing.
Yeah.
So if you have a daily stand-up with your, you know, dev team, that actually keeps you, you know, feel about like what they're currently working on, what their priorities are.
Yeah.
And then also gives you a chance to just plan your thing and avoid last-minute surprises.
Yeah. So mm.
daily
sort of
stand-ups
feedback.
Help. Mm.
Ops guys in a traditional world, they're probably not standing up in this daily stand-up scrum meetings. It's not, they're like,
yeah.
a totally
it's
totally different.
But it's kind of like the most natural thing in the world now, right? It's
yeah.
like, you know, just turn and be like, what do you think about it? Does that make sense? You know,
yeah.
well, let's take this to parking lot, you know. That was never a thing before. And yeah, that's a really good place to start, you know.
Cool.
Very cool.
Awesome. All right. Well, thanks, you guys, so much for your time.
You.
Really appreciate
thanks
it.
Thanks for having us. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, it's been
thank
great.
You.
So, yeah, if, you know, for those of you listening, if you have comments on this particular video, just comment down below here on Channel 9. And if you'd like to interact with us here on the DevOps Dimension show, you can tweet us at DevOps Dimension, and we'd love to hear from you. So, till next time, tune in.
See you. Bye.